darkest grooves, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lying deep inside your subconscious. It's time for a big, scary show.
Hi everybody, this is the artist, author, Brom, writer of Krampus the Yule Lord, and you are listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Scott Caron from Prelude to a Nightmare, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Chris Sarandon. You may remember me from Fright Night, The Nightmare Before Christmas, The Princess Bride, and I'd like to welcome you to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Jack Wallen, author of the iZombie series, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Oh my goodness, it's The Big Scary Show!
Week on a holiday-themed big scary show. No matter how you celebrate, or even if you celebrate the holidays, the Big Scary Show wishes you a very scary holiday season. Badger sits down with Jack Wallen, the author of the iZombie book series, and talks about his literary career and his future works. He even discusses a really interesting tie-in with the Lexington Scream Park. And who knows, you might just come up with a last-second holiday gift idea. The unknown scare actor sits down in a comfy chair, grabs a Bloody Mary, and reads a very special yet horrifying holiday poem. Storm brings up the latest holiday rantings and ventings. In a haunt minute, the haunt rocker Jerry Vane brings you some really, really rockin' Christmas tunes. Badger brings you the latest in Deadline news. The Round Table of Terror keeps to the literary theme and works with author and artist only known as Brom as we talk about his new book, Krampus, the Yule Lord, and how the legend of the Krampus is making a comeback in the U.S. All this, plus more, only on The Big Scary Show.
Greetings, mortals, and anything else listening. Welcome to The Big Scary Show's Deadline News. We have some sad news from Fright Farm in Smithfield, Pennsylvania, from Facebook. Our thoughts are with our friends at Fright Farm in Smithfield, Pennsylvania this week, as they lay to rest one of their own. Longtime Fright Farm tech team member Bob Collar passed away last week. Bob was an electrical genius, designing many of the haunt's custom-built animatronics and props. Bob also controlled the lighting and sound for Fright Farm's stage and musical performances. Not only was he a dedicated supporter of the haunt industry, he was a friend and mentor to the staff at Fright Farm. Bob was a very sincere guy that will be deeply missed. Anyone that has worked at a haunt knows that the staff becomes family, and Bob was part of the Fright Farm family for more than 14 years, which has made his passing particularly hard for the staff. The Big Scary Show wishes to send their condolences to Bob's family and the entire team at Fright Farm during this sad time, and we offer a moment of silence in his honor. Speaking of Fright Farm, The Big Scary Show would like to recognize and give a shout-out to Dan Howard of Masontown, Pennsylvania, for being our 1,100th like on Facebook. Dan is the operations manager at Fright Farm. For being our 1,100th like, Dan will be receiving a copy of the 2013 Haunted Halloween calendar, courtesy of HectorTurner.com. Congrats again, Dan. Remember, folks, for every 100th like on Facebook, we'll give you a shout-out and offer you the chance to plug your haunt-related business. So keep listening and remember to like our Facebook page. And for more information on Fright Farm, you can find them on Facebook or at FrightFarm.com. We have a little bit of news on the Houstonville Haunted House in Houstonville, Kentucky. A little less than 9 months after a portion of the Houstonville Haunted House collapsed onto the street below, the majority of the building came crumbling down in the middle of a heavy stretch of rain on Sunday night, December 9th. Mother Nature did our job for us, Houstonville Mayor David Payton said, referring to the city's plans to demolish the dilapidated building in the near future. The collapse happened around 7:30 p.m. and ruptured a gas line near the corner of the building, causing an evacuation of about 50 people from nearby buildings. No word at this time about any future plans for rebuilding. As the information becomes available, you will hear about it on The Big Scary Show. We have some news on the Midwest Haunters Convention. It's hard to believe that it's that time of year again. Halloween is come and gone, and we start to think about the upcoming trade show season. The Midwest Haunters Convention is currently taking class and workshop submissions for the 2013 10th Anniversary Show. If you have expertise in the area of business, acting, makeup, design, and or props, and would like to share your knowledge with others, please submit your information to MidwestHauntersConvention.com/education/speaker interest. If you have any questions, please contact Barry Schieferstein at Barry@MidwestHaunters.com. We have some more news concerning the Midwest Haunters Convention's pre-show bus tour. The MHC bus tour will be June 5th and 6th, 2013. They're still finalizing details, but they're working with the following haunts on what is shaping up to be a fantastic trip. Check out this list that includes some of the top-rated haunts in the Midwest. Some of these include the Indiana Fields of Fear in Lafayette, Indiana, Fear Itself in Mishawaka, Indiana, the Niles Scream Park in Niles, Michigan, the Phobia House in Kalamazoo, Michigan, The Haunt in Grand Rapids, Michigan, The Terrified Forest and Manor in Pinckney, Michigan, Terror Town in Toledo, Ohio, and Scare Fair in Lima, Ohio. They'll have at least one more haunt they're trying to squeeze in on that Wednesday, so keep watching their website for more updates and make plans now for this memorable haunt bus tour. This is a great way to see what other haunts are doing to entertain their guests. In fact, they tell you to ask Santa now for your magic ticket on one of the four buses for this extraordinary trip. Again, for more details, www.midwestshow.com. We have a quick bit of news from the Netherworld Haunted House in Atlanta. On their Facebook page, the Netherworld Haunted House gift shop will be open Saturday, December 22nd and Sunday, December 23rd from noon until 5 p.m. Need a quality skull toilet brush? How about a collector bobblehead? Or maybe some vintage-style Halloween decorations? Lots of weird and unusual stuff to choose from. Apparel, jewelry, household items, accessories, and so much more. They even have Halloween-inspired Christmas tree ornaments, Krampus stockings, and other holiday-related items. We know this is a last-minute notice, but we hope to see you this weekend. Please help us spread the word. Finally, a little bit of news from Pale Knight Productions. Through the end of 2012, we're offering 10% off anything ordered from us. Stock up now and get some work done early. Pick up that item you wanted last year but never got. Just visit www.palenight.com. Find the items you want and email us at sales@palenight.com with the order, and we'll get an invoice back to you right away. Also, check out the Trading Post, where we posted several items we had in our booth at IAPA this year. There's a complete kitchen scene, a complete living room scene, and a complete farmhouse facade. Each has some effects included with them, and they're practically brand new. Thanks to everyone for a great 2012. We'll see you all again in 2013 with a brand new line of products. Remember, folks, if you have news about the haunt, horror, or Halloween industry, please send it to us at news@bigscaryshow.com and we'll get it on the air. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Are you a fan of the alternative lifestyle? Do you like horror films and gaming reviews? How about Drop Dead Gorgeous Ladies? If you answered yes, then you need to check out Stiff Mag. Stiff Mag is a bi-monthly horror, alternative culture, and entertainment publication that features our horror film reviews, our tech from the crypt and graveyard gaming features, killer reading, literary features, music reviews, columns, and of course our beautiful graveyard girls. For subscription information, visit stiffmag.com. That's stiffmag.com.
This is the Hot Rocker Jerry Vane, and I'd like to wish all the listeners of the Big Scary Show a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Festivus, Krampus, Kwanzaa, Feliz Navidad, and all that, and a very safe and happy New Year, and we will see you in 2013 at all the cons. Stay scary.
King Diamond, no presents for Christmas on the Big Scary Show.
Cats with Photoshop faces? Highlands of Scotland? Goats and trees? Why doesn't anybody have a calendar which speaks to my passion? Wait a minute, what's this? HectorTurner.com? The 2013 Haunted Halloween Calendar? Oh, this is perfect! Oh, this would look great in a workshop. Better yet, at the office.
Reserve your copy of the calendar now at HectorTurner.com.
What is the Big Scary Show? The hosts, Drew Badger.
Hello, everyone. Drew Badger live at Scarefest Lexington, Kentucky, talking to all the celebrities.
The unknown scare actor. Everyone is afraid of something. Storm.
So until next time, keep every minute scary.
And the haunt rocker, Jerry Vane.
Hey, Scaries, this is the haunt rocker, Jerry Vane, and welcome to the next segment of Decomposing, which I'll be covering the track Radiation.
The guests.
Hi, this is Richard Maul, and you're listening.
Hi there, this is R.J. Hattie from Sci-Fi's Face Off, and you're listening to...
Hi, this is Chris Sarandon. You may remember me from Fright Night, The Nightmare Before Christmas, The Princess Bride, and I'd like to welcome you.
Hi, I'm Dee Wallace from E.T. and Cujo, and you're listening to...
Hi, this is Doc Bradley, Pinhead from the Hellraiser movies.
This is Ari Lehman, the first Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th.
This is Penny Dreadful, horror hostess of Shilling Shockers, with a spell for you. Tooth of a rat and the eye of a crow. You are listening to the Big Scary Show.
And their signature segment, the Round Table of Terror.
And suddenly John Goodman is there in 20-foot letters in my font, exquisite corpse, and I freaked out.
If it's happening in the horror, haunted attraction, and Halloween industry, the Big Scary Show is covering it. Tune in for all the latest news, music, interviews, and much, much more. Plus, our gruesome giveaway, sponsored by Screamline Studios. All this, plus much more, only on the Big Scary Show. Find us at www.bigscaryshow.com. On Facebook, www.facebook.com/bigscaryshow. And Twitter, at Big Scary Show.
Hello, everyone. Drew Badger here, live somewhere out there. And I just want to take the time to wish each and every one of our listeners, friends, family, fans, and everyone who's ever been connected with the Big Scary Show a very, very happy holiday season, no matter how you celebrate it, or even if you don't celebrate it at all, and a very safe and prosperous new year. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in 2013.
Again, the dulcet tones of Virgil Franklin fade into the ether. We'd like to welcome you again to the Round Table of Terror. If I sound a little under the weather, it's because I am. Because thanks to me not bringing a dry t-shirt to a haunt I was working at for the last... Yes, Storm, you were right. For the last 6 weeks to 2 months, I have had very severe and untreated bronchitis. So I can't really talk too much tonight, so I'm hoping the host will cut the slack for me. But anyway, I digress. In what could sound like the plot of a bad movie on the Sci-Fi Network, imagine St. Nicholas delivering toys to all the good little children. And then imagine St. Nicholas has a dark, evil companion who targets the naughty children, who may kidnap them or beat them with switches or haul them away to hell or even eat them. Does that sound like something too preposterous, even for sci-fi? Of course not. They'll do anything for a buck. But if you live in Europe, you've probably been taught this story all your life. It's not extremely popular over here, but we're hoping it will be. We're talking about the Krampus, or as I should say in Austria, Der Krampus. It's a Yuletide tradition that predates Santa Claus and is pretty damn horrifying if you actually get into the story. And we put the word out looking for people who knew a little bit about the Krampus, and lo and behold, we found one. We found a gentleman up in Seattle, Washington, goes by the name of Brahm, an artist and writer who just put out a book called Krampus, the Yule Lord, just came out around Halloween, all the way out in Seattle, Washington. Brahm, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for having me. It's good to be part of the Big Scary Show.
Ah, we're glad to have you. This is a fascinating subject, and we hope to have some lively discussion, primarily by the other three hosts. Up in Rhode Island, Storm.
Greetings.
Still having problems or issues with his brand new Windows 8. Down in the Cincinnati area, the unknown scare actor.
Buenos noches.
And no longer the furthest west of our panelists today, the haunt actor, Jerry Vane.
Haunt actor, huh?
I'm sorry, haunt rocker.
Well, I've done one, so that kind of applies.
It's the medicine, right, Badger?
Yeah, they gave you this really cool stuff called medicine. I haven't had it in a long time. It's really cool. You should try it sometime. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah,
I'm out here, windy as hell, but hey, we're here.
But I digress. Welcome again to the Roundtable of Terror. We're talking the Krampus. And Brahm, I'll throw out the first question before my voice totally goes. Tell us kind of what is the legend and the folklore behind the Krampus?
Sure. I guess I'll start kind of with how I discovered Krampus. And I wasn't even aware of him until probably 4 or 5 years ago. And my wife was really into the postcards, and she sort of turned me on to this guy. And a lot of people have probably seen the postcards without even realizing that usually it's a black fur demon with horns, and these were produced around the turn of last century, and they usually picture this this Christmas demon with a sack full of children thrown over his back, or maybe spanking the rumps of buxom women. What's not to love, right?
I like them all.
So seeing this guy, you know, I immediately was intrigued. I wanted to know more about him. And when I started digging into his legends, you realize that his legend has evolved over many, many centuries. Most his current mythology, so to speak, is exactly what you were speaking of. He is a Christmas demon who often accompanies Santa Claus on his runs, or St. Nicholas, usually, which is the more prevalent Christmas figure in Europe. And where Santa Claus is rewarding good children, Krampus is often punishing bad children. Now, even though I just said that, this varies even today from region to region over in the Germanic countries and the Alpine regions. In some regions, there isn't the Santa Claus or the St. Nicholas. It really is just the Krampus. And the Krampus will, if children put out stockings or shoes, he will reward them with treats. And if they don't, or if they've been very bad over the years, like you said, he will, if he's in a good mood, he will just simply put them in a sack and beat them. If he's in a bad mood, if he's in a bad mood, he'll put them in a sack and throw them in the river. If he's in a really bad mood, he will take them back to his cave and cook them and eat them. Which I guess is a wonderful incentive, if there ever was, to be good and to participate in Christmas or winter celebrations.
I will admit that when I was a kid, I remember seeing postcards like that, primarily at my grandparents' house. And, you know, you hear the name, it sounds familiar, but like maybe more people than they want to admit, I finally kind of reintroduced myself to the Krampus about 3 or 4 years ago, watching an episode of The Venture Brothers.
Ah.
And they, had a Christmas special, and, you know, one of the through some magical properties, the Krampus was unleashed on the earth and had to fight Brock Samson and all that cool stuff. So, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, I remember the Krampus. And he had the traditional basket with a couple of kids in the back, and he was switching people, and it was pretty creepy, even for Venture Brothers standards.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like I was mentioning, that is the current mythology, but he's evolved, and, you know, going back a couple hundred years, he was still much more that Christmas figure. He had a role that was somewhere in between pagan and Christian. He wasn't completely accepted on you know, in the Christian side of the celebration, but there still lingered more of this folklore mythology. But he wasn't so much a pagan ritual as well. So this character was, he was even outlawed at one point by some governments because, I guess, of his association with traditional, he was counter to the nationalistic viewpoint of those governments. But what I found really interesting when I was digging was where he came from. When the novel I was writing, Krampus the Yule Lord, it goes back to the very beginnings of Krampus. I like to stay true to mythologies. I'm fascinated by folk tales and mythologies and where they came from, and even what came before that. So with Krampus, seeing him associated with Christmas and with Santa, my first question was, what is their relationship? Is Krampus Santa Claus's slave? You know, are they sort of a tag team, a good cop, bad cop? You know, do they hate each other? Do they like each other? And most importantly, who would win in a fight? So I started digging back, and what was interesting to find out, counter to a lot of what we consider Christmas traditions, Krampus actually came before Santa Claus. He evolved, both of them came from the same origins, as a matter of fact. They both evolved out of winter solstice, from ancient pagan Yuletime celebrations. And the original version of either one of these was the Yuletide goat. And the goat being, you know, sort of a nature spirit, looking at Krampus, you can sort of see his goat-like origins. But he evolved into more of a horned nature spirit. And even though, you know, Christianity often tends to portray a lot of these horned figures as demons, or they demonize a lot of them, originally these were the nature spirits who the pagans worshipped. And, you know, they were fertility gods. They were the, you know, the winter solstice, the whole of one year dying and the new rebirth of the land. So his original start was, he was a very positive figure. But like so many of the old gods and deities, you know, if you worshipped him or paid tribute to him, you were rewarded. But if you didn't, you were punished. And so even in the pagan days, Krampus, you know, would reward those who followed his traditions, and those that didn't got put into the sack.
Where was the Krampus, where did the legend of the Krampus flourish the most? Is it more like Northern Europe, Southern, Eastern, Western? Did it extend beyond the boundaries of Europe?
So in my research, primarily it came out of the Germanic regions, the similar to the Norse mythology, Austria, Croatia, Switzerland, even Northern Italy, and he has many names and many variations. There's even sort of a female version of him. He came over in America with the German immigrants, or maybe it was even the Dutch immigrants, and their version of him was called the Belsnickels. And the Belsnickels are interesting because they're really kind of a cross between the Krampus and Santa Claus, and the fact that they dressed up, they're geared up for Christmas, but it was often in the skins of animals, and they would carry sticks and shotguns, but they went to house, and as with most of these characters, they rewarded good kids, and bad kids they would terrorize. So it's interesting. Yeah, it did start in Europe, but it spread through many communities, and he evolved into several different versions. And that particular, the Bell's Nickels, those are some of the versions that, you know, eventually evolved into the more human Santa Claus versions.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Brahm. You know, I've been looking over some of the Krampus drawings and pictures and photos from some of the festivals, and you know, he can be quite a terrifying looking character, and the whole concept of him and Saint Nicholas working together is really foreign to a lot of Americans, because, you know, like you said, this is a Germanic origin of deity, but I'm losing my focus here. I don't know where I'm going with this.
That's all right. I didn't give you any of my medicine. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, it is interesting you mentioned that, because the different versions of him in Holland, in Dutch, in Holland, the version there is Santa Claus arrives on a ship from Spain, and he's accompanied with six or seven Schwarzpiets, which are essentially Krampuses. They're called Black Peets. There's very different versions of them. Often they're just, you know, humans in red suits that are all covered in black. And one version of that is they get the black from going up and down the chimney. Some of the versions are there, you know, before things became quite as politically correct, they were Santa's slaves. They were actually, you know, people from Africa or India or whatnot that accompanied him. But still, there is another version of something, again, that myself, with my North American traditions, never heard of. And this is current. If you go to Holland for Christmas holidays, that's what you'll see, is St. Nicholas accompanied with his six or seven Black Peets.
Hmm. Is that any relationship to Sinterklaas? Because I know that Sinterklaas, they have what look like Santa Claus figures, but in blackface. Is that where Black Pete comes from, or is that something completely different?
They're all variations. And let me just state for the record here, is as much research as I have done, what I found was complete inconsistency all throughout, meaning all the myths and legends are a little different. So I don't pretend to be an authority. I can only just pass along what I found in my readings. And again, I found things that contradict. But the point I'm trying to make is yeah, there's you know, there's probably three or four different versions right there in Holland, but the one you mentioned, yeah, Sinterklaas is sort of he's one of those that I kind of call sort of in between the Krampus and the Santa Claus.
My parents went on a cruise on the Rhine River for like their 50th anniversary, and they said that while they were in Amsterdam, they saw these Santas dressed in blackface and had no clue what that was, and I remembered hearing that that was Sinterklaas. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
But what's also interesting is our view of Santa. Santa Claus was you know, much more the austere St. Nicholas for years, a thin, stern, judgmental feller that was very, charitable. But it wasn't until the early 19th century that Santa Claus really started to evolve into this jolly, fat guy, and a large part of that had to do with the Coca-Cola ads that were sponsored by Coke. And also, Santa's clothing was often different colors. It was green, it was red, it was, several variations. But when Coca-Cola commissioned these, of course, from that day on, Santa Claus' suit was conveniently Coca-Cola red.
Well, of course. Market branding all the way back then.
So we have this jolly, friendly Santa Claus, and over the last century, he's lost his edge, so to speak, and that's one of my hopes with this resurgent with interest in Krampus, is that maybe the Christmas season will remember its edge and will bring a little bit back of the whole Yuletide rituals back into the Christmas season.
So, I'm sitting here on Wikipedia as you're talking about this, and they're talking about how, as you were referring to Santa Claus, Santa Claus basically gives the naughty, in America, or in North America, Santa Claus gives the naughty kids the coal. So he pretty much does the job of both St. Nicholas and the Krampus. Is that the way I'm reading that?
You know, again, there's so many different versions, but yeah, you know, that goes in our tradition. If you're naughty, you get the coal. But it seems like the coal is we're losing even the coal, you know, and the coal is a far cry from being put in a sack and being beaten. Much, much better motivator to being good than the coal. But you know, when's the last time anybody got coal? I think we should start making a point of at least putting coal in kids' stockings.
To me, I'm personally all for putting on a Krampus costume, but I actually did get a sack of coal by a friend of mine as a gag gift, but it was a You've Been Naughty, genuine Allegheny County coal from somewhere in Pennsylvania.
That's impressive. Most I've ever seen was that horrible black licorice made into coal, and you even got a hammer to try and knock it out with. My brother got that a couple years.
Well, Badger, at least you didn't get thrown into a sack and beaten.
No. Well, we won't get into my father's ways of disciplining me, but which made me the person I am today, but that would be a topic for another roundtable.
But one of the wonderful things about the Krampus celebrations is, and I encourage anybody listening to just type in Krampus in YouTube and watch some of these, is that it's for kids and adults, but it's very much celebrated by, you know, dressing up, creating costumes. It has very much the festive atmosphere and fun of Halloween. They have parades. And a lot of this is fueled by alcohol, which just
fancy
kind of
that.
Ups the level of mischievousness. A lot of the Krampus they would kind of gather in groups and run around the town during the day, basically chasing young girls and guys with sticks. And I just think bringing a little bit of that in the Christmas season would make things much more interesting and entertaining.
It's pretty much any office party I've ever been to, except with goat skins and a stick.
Now,
that'll work.
Would that actually be the Krampus Loft?
Oh, what you were mentioning? Yeah, and it's one of several different festivals, but that is probably the prominent one. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was as you were talking about that, I was seeing this reference to alcohol-fueled celebrations and schnapps and guys running around chasing after young women. So
there you go. What more?
AKA my college years.
Sounds like Thursday night at the last gig.
Well, what about, is there any one thing that really just fascinated you about the Krampus, Brahm? I mean, if you look at, I'm just looking at some of the references
here. There's a lot to have them write a book on it. That's what I'm interested in.
Okay, well, take it, Storm.
Yeah, with the Krampus and your research and stuff on it, what is it that inspired you to just go from art into writing the book and the novelization in addition to your artwork on it?
Well, as an artist and an author, I'm often attracted to things that I'm interested in drawing and painting, and Krampus is a very visual character, obviously. So I was looking for a way to, you know, to write a story around him. But on the surface, he seems very one-dimensional, and a lot of the interpretations of I've seen of him have been fairly one-dimensional. He's this evil Christmas demon, and, you know, he's out to get you. But as a writer, I like for my characters to you know, it's more gray area. It's their, what are their motivations? And I was looking for motivations for Krampus. What makes him do what he does, and what is he all about? And so once I started digging into the resource, doing my research, and I came across, you know, all the ties to the Yule, to the pagan, and to Norse mythology. I started to, you know, wonder. Again, you know, what is his deal with Santa Claus? And Santa Claus seems like his obvious nemesis, his opponent in this tale. So I think that's what motivated the story, was trying to find out what their story is, why, you know, they hated each other, or what was behind it. And once I started digging into the mythology, just the natural evolution of Krampus coming first, Santa Claus kind of moving in with St. Nicholas, and as the church came in and sort of pushed the beliefs of Krampus out and sort of repainted his character as a devil, it seemed very natural. It's like, of course, this guy was, you know, this pagan god, and he was worshipped, and he sort of got a bum rap out of the whole thing, and now everybody loves Santa Claus. So the story was Krampus comes back, and he wants to reclaim his holiday. And for me as a writer, this so much of this was European based, I like to write in an environment I'm familiar with. So I decided to set it in modern day Boone County, West Virginia, to play off the, you know, the whole rural aspect of Americana. And so that's sort of the backdrop to this conflict.
There's the movie that Sci-Fi will eventually make. I can see it.
I don't know. It's you know, actually reading the reviews and some of the encapsulations of the book and stuff, it actually sounds really good. But I'm also a big fan of, you know, a lot of your you know, some of your mythical creatures, a lot of the folklore stuff, and I'm also a big fan of alternate history. So this type of stories with twists and things into that, and just drawing in different ideas from folklore and history, and just thrown into a little bit of modern thing, it's just right up my alley. So I was really impressed by some of the reviews and the things with the book.
Well, thank you. No, I'm the same way. What I love is to take mythology, try to stay true to it, but try to make it as gritty and real as possible. So even though as absurd as the story sounds, I mean, that's part of what was exciting to me. That's absurd. Krampus comes back and he's going to kill Santa Claus. The whole book's about him trying to kill Santa Claus. And it sounds like it could be very silly. So the challenge was to try to take that and make it gritty and real. And then it became interesting to me. And then the characters became interesting because, you know, who is Santa Claus really? You know, what is his motivation? Is he a god? Is he, you know, some sort of supernatural creature? And then, you know, and again, once I started tying it all into Norse mythology and Santa, you know, Odin and all of Loki and all of that is where a lot of this stuff came out of. So I just worked it all into the story.
And it looks like even from this is your fourth book, correct?
It is, yes.
And even, you know, from some of the other books, just the quick synopsis and, you know, even some of your art, I think you're really right down the alley for haunters and the haunt industry, because it's a lot of, you know, stories and folklore and things just gone wrong, gone bad, and that's usually how we describe our haunts.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of it is I have a lot of empathy for the monsters, and, you know, just like with the whole original Frankenstein book, it was so fascinating to see what a sympathetic creature Frankenstein could be, and that's part of what gives that story such depth. And it's part of what I think Anne Rice brought to the vampire stories, Vampire Lestat and Stone. It was suddenly we were seeing these stories through the eyes of the vampire. So to me, I love to dig into that mythology and find that sympathetic aspect of this monster. And even though maybe they're a monster to everybody else, there's something going on there that makes them do what they do.
Okay, so in 30 years, if we have glitter Krampuses and, you know, that kind of stuff, it's all your fault.
I can only hope such thing will happen.
I still think Sci-Fi has to make a movie on this. We can get Virgil Franklin to do the score.
No, he's probably listening right now and, you know, writing up the sheet music.
It's time to build your undead horde with the best-rated zombie prompts 2 years in a row. You'll find them at creepycollection.com, along with the scary creepy clown prompts, the frozen meat locker prompts, the deadly doll prompts, the creepy killer prompts, and the deadly deal life-size bodies. creepycollection.com, the online source for all your pro-haunting and animatronic needs. You'll find creepy collection props in many venues, from yard haunts to major screen parks to movie production and even crime scene investigation. Featuring FearFlex technology, Creepy Collection is taking the static out of static. For your gore and more, that's Creepy Collection at www.creepycollection.com.
Let me ask you this, Brom. Are the festivals and the whole celebratory brouhaha over the Krampus in the Alpine and Germanic regions, are they still as popular in Europe as they were 100 years ago?
You know, I don't know that myself, but I do know that in the United States, they grow. Every year we get a couple of more. This year we had one in Seattle and Portland, I think Pennsylvania, maybe Pittsburgh, and there were a couple more. I unfortunately can't think of off the top of my head.
I believe Philadelphia's got something coming up.
Yeah, and the one in Portland, which unfortunately I missed, but it sounded wonderful. They had several bands and costumes and performers. It just sounded like a wonderful event.
There's an amazing Krampuslauf Graz, Austria from 2010 video on YouTube. I encourage everybody to go search that out. After I saw the Venture Brothers thing, and I found that on YouTube. I mean, it's snowing, and there just seems to be wave after wave of Krampus costumes walking down the street,
wow,
jumping kids and things. It is absolutely amazing to look at.
And those costumes, the tradition of making those masks go back for just, you know,
for
hundreds of years.
Some of them are carrying broomsticks, and some of them are carrying other things. But why the cowbells? Anything you find in your research?
Because you could never have enough cowbells.
No. I read something about that. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but that is, you know, there's a tradition of the bells. But what I was mentioning about the mask is there's a craftsman's tradition there. There's people that just specialize in making these incredible masks, and they're hand-carved, I still haven't made it over to one of these, but the wife and I are hoping maybe by next Christmas we can get over and participate. And if we do, my hope is to visit some of these craftsmen and you know, have one of these masks.
Well, that would definitely be, for somebody who's really just dove in feet first into the Krampus mythology, that would just be a feather in your cap.
Oh, sure, sure.
Now, isn't there also some stories where the Krampus wore a wooden mask?
Well, with the Bells-Nichols, the early American version of this guy, and they wore all kinds of masks. They would make masks out of animal furs. So, you know, there is that tradition.
So let me ask you, people write books for many different reasons. What was your reason in writing this? Did you just want to create a work of fiction off this? Did you just want to hope that somebody would understand what the Krampus is all about? Did you hope that it would gather a foothold in the holiday season here? I mean, you know, I know people who are trying to make the Krampus more relevant in the United States, and I'm just wondering if you're part of that movement.
You know, I would love for all of the above. I mean, all of the above is part of the reasons and some part of it, and just my love of Krampus, I, of course, would like for him to catch on. But as far as motivations for writing, I just feel I have these stories in me, and I become inspired by the idea of a character. And for me, writing, what's so fun about writing is it's like acting, and you're playing all the parts. I'm a bit introverted by nature, so I'm not somebody that would be comfortable getting on stage acting. But in my room, you know, I can sit there and play these different roles. So once I sort of figure out who the characters are, in a way, the book kind of writes itself, or I should say the characters kind of write the book, and they become their own motivation, I guess, for seeing the story to its end.
Do you think you have a sequel or a Krampus 2 in you right now?
You know, he's such a great character. I would love to play in that world again, but I tend to like to move on. I would find it difficult to write a series of books. I know a lot of authors, they establish their worlds and their characters and you know, they play on them for years, but I tend to, I'm always looking to do the next thing. It keeps the process interesting. I mean, it's part of the reason I like to both paint and write is if I just wrote constantly, I think it would burn out. And I know in the past when I've just made a living off the painting, you know, after 5 years of just painting and deadlines and paintings and deadlines, I begin to dread coming into the studio and paint. But with the writing and the painting together, I can write for 3 or 4 months and then take a break and draw and paint the characters. And what's interesting is you discover things in both disciplines that feed on each other. I'll discover stuff in the paintings, what they look like, what they're wearing, that gets put into the story. And, of course, when I'm writing the story, the characterization of the characters and what they need to have in their dress and so on ends up in the paintings. So it's creatively, it's very, the two mediums really support each other.
Really quickly, I've gone on your website and I've seen some of your artwork since you've been mentioning that, and I have got to say, if you are not heavily influenced by Warren comics in the 70s, you know, holly hat.
Absolutely. Just grew up on Creepy and Eerie's, and as we were mentioning a little bit earlier, even beyond Creepy and Eerie, the Tomb of Terror and the Weird Tales and all those almost B, C grade level of horror comics that were so popular in the 70s. I spent a lot of time looking at these and making my own stories based on them.
I see Boris Vallejo influences. I'll bet you John Bolton or Ernie Chan or just you know, amazing sword and sorcery type. And
yeah, Sam Houlihan and Frazetta, all those guys, yeah. Early DC comics were a big part of it, too.
I'd certainly like to get permission when I buy that 76 Dodge van to use your artwork on the side of it, because that'll kick in.
That'd be great airbrushed on the side of a van, no doubt.
I got a question. What would it take to get the Krampus relevant in the U.S. or make it even a bigger, bigger icon or something like that for over the holidays? What do you think that would take?
It seems to be happening naturally just because it's such an interesting character, and it seems that our culture has moved to be fascinated with dark things. And when I say that, I don't mean that in a morbid way, but more in a macabre way, just in the way that we like horror movies. And, Halloween has just grown in such popularity with the adults, and I'm hoping the Krampus, too. I mean, it's outrageous for one thing. It's a little bit of a response to all the overt commercialism of the Santa and the Christmas. So I see a lot of potential as people become aware of him for him to become more popular. And I know in my experience, since I've been doing book tours and stuff, I often ask people to raise their hand if they know who Krampus is. And it seems like he's become in people's awareness just over the last several years. So my hope is that, his popularity will continue to grow.
Is there any kind of movement or organized movement that you're aware of, any kind of groups that get together and try to promote this? I mean, I know you were mentioning, like Krampus Lofts in Portland and Philadelphia and things, but is there any kind of national movement?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, in the artistic community, I've seen galleries that have put on Krampus themed shows. A lot of the Wicca community seems to enjoy, this throwback to the whole pagan thing. So it's sort of just kind of happening organically in a lot of places at once. And I'm hoping the dots all start to connect and we'll get more of a national recognition.
And hopefully Hollywood won't get a hold of it and just completely screw it up.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mention that, Badger, because down at the bottom of the Wikipedia page, I was just looking at some of the pop culture that the Krampus has shown up in, and that varies from graphic novels like one called Chicken Hair to the Colbert Report on TV. G4 had a commercial with the Krampus back in 2003. Then there's also,
don't forget the Venture Brothers.
The Venture Brothers is in there, but also here's one: Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated in an episode called "Wrath of the Krampus" from this year. A creature calling itself Krampus terrifies misbehaving children. And to finish off that list, it goes to American Dad. If you're a fan of Seth MacFarlane's work, which I am, American Dad 2012 Christmas episode is about the Krampus. I can't wait to see that.
And there's been a couple of European interpretations. One of the movies I saw was sort of a B-grade slasher kind of movie, which is fine. You know, he's open to lots of interpretation. But there was also, I just drew a blank. There was another version where he was handled in a much more of a Nordic tradition type of way. It was, I'm sorry, I can't think of it. But anyway, the point is there have been a couple of films that have been based off him in Europe.
Okay. Well,
Rare Export. Sorry, Rare Export. That was the name of the movie.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Is that available like Netflix or anything?
It is. I saw it on Netflix. It's Rare Export, A Christmas Story, I think is what it's called. It's a very odd name. It doesn't clue you in, but it is essentially these sort of mad Santa Clauses are loose in the land, and they're sniffing out naughty children. And it's a little bit humorous, but it's dark at the same time. It's very witty and very clever.
Speaking of dark, sitting here looking on your website, and I'm looking at the picture that you've one of your paintings of the Krampus, the Yule Lord, and I'm reading the prologue to your. I'm assuming this is the prologue to your book.
Uh huh.
You talk about dark. I mean, wow. I mean, it starts out with Santa Claus and what Krampus wants to do to him, and it doesn't get much darker than that.
Yeah, again, what I like to do is try to go gritty and real. You know, this is, in my particular story, this is somebody that has a 500-year vendetta against Santa Claus, and he's trapped in this cave, and all he wants to do is get out and exact his revenge.
I just looked at the last line of this, where it says, Bloodline of the Great Loki, which is Norse mythology.
Yes.
Is that the folklore behind it? Is he a direct descendant of Loki from Norse mythology, or what?
Yeah, because it all ties in to, again, the Germanic regions and paganism and stuff. It all ties into the Norse mythology. So I use that as a framework. And again, when you dig into the Norse myths, there's so many variations of all those tales. So it was really easy to take those themes and stories and sort of twist them and play off of them. But in my tale, Krampus is in the bloodline of Loki.
Okay.
Very interesting.
And Loki, and I'm sure a lot of people are completely familiar with this, but Loki and Odin were sort of at odds as far as the Norse gods. So Santa sort of comes out of the Odin lineage, and Krampus comes out of the Loki and Hel, spelled H-E-L, which is the woman who kind of ran the underworld. So that's sort of his lineage.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, we're getting towards the end of the show. Rob, I'd love to hear, what do you got coming on the horizon? What can our listeners expect to see new from you in the coming months?
Over the history of my career, my focus has been primarily as an illustrator. I spent the first 20 years painting, you know, the stuff I loved, the horror, the science fiction, the fantasy. And at some point, I had all these stories in me, and I started writing and put the two together. But wanting to get that art out there and have it be available to people, I am working on a giant retrospective of my artistic career at the moment. And it's going to be over 200 pages, and it just essentially covers the best art that I've done over the last, gosh, I think I've been in this business over 30 years now. And I'm putting that together, and it should be available in around June. It's already available for pre-orders, and you can find information on this along with information on Krampus at my website, which is bromart.com.
Awesome. So a Brahm coffee table book coming this summer.
There you go, yes.
Sounds sweet.
We usually reserve that for the plugs, but we'll give you the chance to do that again.
Okay.
One last question. You're up in the Seattle area.
Yes.
And, you know, prior to recording, you talked about being an Army brat. Has the locations where you've lived influenced your writing? I know you've lived in Alabama and Georgia and Washington and parts unknown. Have those influences of the culture, the difference between living in Atlanta, say,
and Seattle influenced any ways that you write?
Most certainly. I also have lived in Hawaii, Japan, Germany, and there's a lot of the pros and cons to it. I mean, as a kid, it can be tough being put into being uprooted and put into a new environment. For me, it was always exciting to see another culture, and I think witnessing all these cultures is part of what has fueled my interest in folklore and mythology, and it kind of helps you to see the world, the variety that the world has to offer. The other part of the moving from every 3 years from location to location is having a skill set, being able to draw good, helps you be accepted. So that was very encouraging to my art. I always had my art to keep me company, and it also helped me to, make friends and find people with similar interests.
So any books on Japanese monsters or Japanese sun gods or,
Well, that sounds like a great idea.
Akashita,
I haven't thought of that yet, but that could certainly be fun. I don't know. The Krampus just spoke to me. Maybe there's something in Japanese folklore that's waiting for me to bring to life.
Excellent. Well, I'm about done vocals-wise, so we're going to wind this down, one last time with, we definitely want to thank Brahm from Seattle, Washington, and other areas, for coming on the Big Scary Show's Roundtable of Terror to talk about the Krampus. I mean, it's the Christmas season, and, haunters like a good scare, and this is one of the most terrifying things I could ever imagine, unless you're 8 years old and sitting at the mall waiting to go on Santa's lap. There ain't much more things terrifying than that. But, once again, give you a chance to plug your website, plug your books. Where are your books available? I know you did The Devil's Rose, you did The Plucker, an illustrated novel, among others, and now the new book, Krampus the Yule Lord. Where can people find copies of the book? Where can people see samples of your art? And are you attending any sci-fi cons or comic cons or doing any book engagements, readings, or anything?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the Big Scary Show for having me on, and I'd like to thank all the listeners that have hung in there and listened to our tales of Krampus. As far as is projects and things I'd like to plug, as I was mentioning earlier, a new art book retrospective will be coming out in June. That, along with details on my other books and where to find them, the easiest thing to do is just go to brahmart.com, and I have all the links there. Most of my books are carried in all the major book chains. So, and as far as appearances, I'm going to be at Comic-Con in San Diego this year. It looks like I'm going to be a guest of honor at Gen Con in Indiana also this summer.
This is 2013?
2013.
Okay.
And then in the spring, one of my favorite shows is the Spectrum Art Live show. And that will be, I have the link on my website, but I believe that is in May.
Awesome.
Sweet. Very cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Gen
so
Con.
Definitely Haunters. Haunters, check it out. Anybody shopping for Christmas for Haunters, hardback, paperback, e-novels and stuff, check out brahmart.com because, I think anybody listening to this might want this in their stocking.
And I do see your book is up on Amazon, so I assume all the online sources where people buy books, you can find copies as well.
Most certainly.
Okay. Do you have a audio version of it as well?
There is. It's performed by Kirby Hayborn, and he does an amazing job. And he also just happens to be on the Target Christmas ads right now, which is hilarious to see the guy that just did the whole Krampus voice and everything suddenly doing a wonderful Happy Christmas ad.
That's fantastic.
That's great.
Well, Brahm, once again, thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule of watching it rain and drinking coffee to come on the Big Scary Show to talk about the Krampus again. Once again, brahmart.com for all things Brahm. And again, thank you to the Forga host, Storm up in Rhode Island.
Krampus is riding shotgun with Stormy Claus this Christmas.
Unknown scare actor.
I'm getting a Krampus costume, and I'm going down to the local shopping mall in a couple of days to scare the crap out of some kids.
The rock star Jerry Vane.
I'm just getting a cramp.
And my wife in that too. Interesting. And my name is Drew Badger. Thank you again. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you guys may celebrate.
This Happy is, Yuletide.
There you go. Happy yes. Yuletide. And all, you know, can't leave the pagans and everyone else out there. We all celebrate a lot of good things. However you celebrate, have a good time. Be safe. This is the Roundtable of Terror on the Big Scary Show.
Scary. At Thorn Web Designs, we know what you want, what you need, and we will give you exactly that. Since 2007, we have been providing our customers with the best logos, web designs, and more. We can offer to keep their image dark, scary, and memorable, not to mention fantastic prices. With clients from Nightmare Zone Haunted House and Wells Township Haunted House, we are ready to give you the smoke you need for web presence. To get your quote and to browse our portfolio, visit ThornWebDesigns.com.
Jed Block. Tis the season. On the Big Scary Show.
Well, it's Christmas Eve. Wish I could undo what I'd done, and you know I probably could if I had another bullet left in this gun. But all I got's a bottle of Jack that should have swayed to guilt, alright, as I wash down a few more pills on this suddenly silent night. Supposed to be like this, shattered glass instead of snowflakes, but there's only so far and a man can bend before his patience breaks. Now there's no laughter in this house, a sign of life. All the colors faded to black like a short-circuited Christmas light. Perhaps I should have stayed my hand, but I've warned you and your kin time and time again. Maybe you and your mom came to understand while huddling on the floor how much I hate that damn fruitcake, and you'll never bring another one through my door. Christmas Eve. Wish I could undo what I'd done, and you know I probably could if I had another bullet left in this gun.
Happy Horror Days, Haunters. The Unknown Scare Actor, aka Jim, here. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of our listeners and our sponsors for the support we've had over the past 8 months. It's been a great ride so far, and I only see better things coming in 2013. So again, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you all for being supportive, and I want to wish everyone a happy and safe holiday season, no matter what tradition or faith you have, whether it be Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, the winter solstice, Yule, Festivus, or if you don't celebrate anything. Just be safe this time of year. Enjoy the time you have with friends and family, and I will make sure that everyone faces their fears in 2013. Do you hear that? The asylum is being overrun. It's time to go to Von Caron Productions and check out the Insane Ensemble. For those troublesome lunatics, they have the commitment coat, a straitjacket designed to keep them restrained. Or, if you're the doctor who likes to experiment, then the psychosurgical coat was made just for you. Go to Von Caron Productions, www.voncaron.com. That's V-O-N-C-H-A-R-O-N, Von Caron Productions. Get there before you too are infected by the madness. Greetings, Haunters. Are you ready to face your fears? Brought to you by Dark Spectre Custom Couture. Check out Nez's work at www.darkspectre.com. Couture for the creatures of the night. Twas the fright before Christmas and all through the haunt. Not a creature was stirring, no victims to taunt. The skeletons were hung by the boiler with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be scared. The monsters were hiding underneath all the beds, while visions of blood and gore danced in their heads. Elvira showing cleavage and a vampire named Drac had just settled down after a typo negative snack. When out in the graveyard arose such a clatter, the zombies woke up to see what was the matter. Up from the cold earth they dug their way out, moaning and groaning and shuffling about. The full moon shone bright in the sky as werewolves howled and a bat flew by. When what did my wandering eyes see in fear but a horde of demons snacking on reindeer, and a little old driver so bloody and slick, I saw at that moment the end of St. Nick. More rapid than harpies they ate and they fed, and he screamed and he cried and he fell over dead. Now Barbus and Amon, Forcus and Zagon, eat Marbus and Legion, Kali and Leviathan. Drain all his blood, suck the bones clean. Finally he knows that I say what I mean. As his bones hit the ground for scavengers to take, growling and snarling and claiming their stake, up to a housetop something flew, with a sleigh full of toys and evil to do. And then in a shiver I heard on the roof the thumping and pawing of really big hoofs. As I drew in a hand and was turning around, down the chimney the Krampus came with a bound. He was covered in fur from his head to his foot, and his hair was stained with blood and with soot. A bag full of children he had flung on his back, opening it up to look for a snack. His eyes how they burned, his teeth all bloody, his claws were like razors, his hooves were all scaly. His mouth was open in a wide wicked grin, as foul-looking drool ran down his chin. A sharpened finger bone he held in his teeth, used as a toothpick to clean out the meat. He had a sharp face, looking evil and cold, and his laugh was as chilling to all who were bold. He was tall and lean and scary as hell, and my nose curled up from an ungodly smell. A flash of a tooth and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had plenty to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, coal in the kid's stockings, and turned with a jerk. Grabbed the bottle and drank of his schnapps, and giving a nod, up the chimney he shot. He sprang off the roof, gave a loud scream, disappeared in the night like some horrible dream. But I heard him say, as he vanished into the night, "Scary Christmas to all, and to all a good fright."
Always remember one thing, Haunters. Everyone is afraid of something.
Wednesday 13th, Buried by Christmas, on the Big Scary Show.
Everybody, Drew Badger live at Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky, talking to all the celebrities, all the cool movie stars, and other people out here. But let's not forget the authors out here. I am with Jack Wallen, the author, I guess you would say, of the very famous and very popular iZombie series, plus many things other than that. Let's talk with him. Jack, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Tell us about a little bit how you kind of got started into the genre and how you kind of worked up to creating a whole series of books like iZombie.
I woke up one morning with a question in my head.
and the question was, what would it feel like to turn into a zombie? I really wanted to answer that question. I realized the only way I could answer that question was to write the book about it.
Well, you could always get bit by one.
Sure, you could.
But what do you do for an encore, I guess?
Exactly. The first book is called Eye Zombie Eye, and it's about a journalist who is infected by a zombie, and he decides to chronicle his dive into the zombie abyss. So, as you can expect, at the end of that series, he's fully zombified. and he, along the way, he picks up a crew of people, one of which is one of the greatest female hackers alive, computer hackers. And she picks up the mantle in the second book, and she's going to be the protagonist for the rest of the series. It'll be a 10-book series, unless I run out of words that rhyme with I.
There's a lot of them, so you got a few to go, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I actually had somebody come by today to buy a book, and he guessed the title of the fifth book.
Ooh, did he win a free book?
He did, actually. He did. The fifth book will be called Cry Zombie Cry, and I'm working on getting a band to record a song called Cry Zombie Cry.
I know a couple of good rockabilly bands. I played in them for many years. I might be able to give you contact info.
Awesome, that would be perfect.
Or maybe something along the lines of a Johnny Cash kind of thing.
Yeah, everybody loves Johnny Cash.
Yes, they do. So tell me a little bit how you got started into writing.
I was an actor for 20 years. Traveled around the country. I was on Broadway a number of times. Did some BBC films. And after doing it for 20 years...
Were you the token American in the BBC films?
Pretty much, yeah.
Everyone's got one. Yeah.
You're right. I kind of saw the writing on the wall. The economy was really killing the arts. And I needed to... I knew I had to find a way to appease my artistic soul. And... one summer in between gigs, I wrote a book. It was 10 years ago. And I wrote it and completed it within the 3 months of the summer. And I just let it sit for a while. And then all of a sudden I realized, hey, you know, this actually works for me. And I wrote a second one, and it sat for a while. And then I wrote a couple of other series. And then I came in with the zombie genre, and everything just took off. And then I was able to publish the old books that I wrote.
What made you decide to go into the zombie genre? Is that just because they're somewhat trendy at this point? Or was it just literally, like you said, you woke up and said, this might be a good subject for a book?
Well, I've always been a horror fan since I was a little kid. When I grew up just outside of Indianapolis, Indiana. So when I was a little kid, I grew up watching Sammy Terry. He was a... kind of an icon in Indiana for horror. It was
late night horror host.
Gotcha.
We just did a show on late night horror hosts a few episodes ago.
Yeah, and he was wonderful, and he got me addicted to horror. And I knew that I was going to wind up writing horror at some point. And it wasn't that zombies were popular. It was the way I look at it when I was trying to decide what to write for horror. I was looking at the various subgenres of it, and I knew that vampires were out, because...
Once they sparkle, you know the shark has been jumped.
Yes. Well, I've been telling everybody, I said, I'm going to write zombies until somebody comes out with a movie where zombies are handsome and sparkle, and then I'm done.
Or sing and dance and do musicals.
Yeah, or sing and dance and do musicals, exactly. But I knew I was going to write horror, and when I woke up that day with that question, I was like, this is it. This is going to be the... first true horror novel I'm going to write. And ever since I started that one, I try to focus on the series, and every once in a while I'll do a one-off. Scream Park was originally going to be a one-off, but I have decided it's going to be a series as well.
Yeah, I was looking at this Scream Park, and it has got a somewhat familiar character on the front there for people who are familiar with Scream Park Haunted Attraction. It seems like it's almost a novel about the characters in the theme park. At first cover glance, you know.
And you're correct.
Oh, wow.
During the summer, they brought me in to do an acting boot camp for the actors in Scream Park. While I was there, the last exercise I had them do was an improvisation based on their characters. And while I was watching them do that, I realized there's a book to be written here. And I spoke with Eddie Embry, the owner. I said, would you allow me to write a book using the name Scream Park and the characters of Scream Park? And he was very happy, very pleased, and very willing. So on the cover is Weasel. So a lot of, especially people around this area in Lexington, will recognize Weasel and Noodles and Dr. Driz. And what also is really interesting is Chris Davis, who plays Dr. Driz, is the main character in the book.
So is this kind of some like wacky adventures of Scream Park characters, or is this some kind of fantasy, horror, adventure, comedy? What's this all about?
When the idea came about, when I posed the question during the acting boot camp, what happens at Scream Park when the doors are closed? And I thought it would be really fun to see, be a fly on the wall when the real ghosts come out. And basically, Eddie told me a story that the grounds that the Scream Park were on, there were some things happened, some murders happened. So I built on that. So part of it's set in the past. And we develop, through the chapters, we develop the realization that there is someone bad from the past coming to the present.
Very, very interesting. It sounds like it's going to be a fun thing in a whole series of novels.
What was that?
Yeah, and it looks like you're going to create a whole series of novels off this?
I am. What I'm going to do is every year before Scream Park opens, I'm going to have a new novel for them.
And that's just something for them to sell in their gift shop and sell in local stores around here? Or?
Yeah, they'll sell it there, and you can also buy it on Amazon, the paperback version or the Kindle version. But I'm going to release it. It will be released in paperback here at Scarefest and at Scream Park first.
That's a really neat concept. I've never heard of something like that. You hit on something, and you know, if you patent that idea real quick, no other theme parks around the country can do this. You know,
I'm probably going to talk to Eddie about that just to make sure. But you know,
you got those things in Florida and California and up in Ohio that would just jump on an idea like this.
I know, and I have a lot of respect for Eddie, and I've known Angela for a while, and they brought me in. They trusted me enough to bring me in, and I really want to give back to them. Sure. Because they're great people.
You touched on something a second ago when you were saying Amazon and Kindle and all that. How much of your book sales are digital versus going out and actually buying a printed book? Because it seems to me that everyone's got Kindles and Nooks and whatever these days to read them digital. I mean, do you think that's a hindrance? Do you think that's a better thing for writers to have all that in digital format versus a physical solid piece of paper that you can hold and smell the paper? Because, you know, let's face it, we all do that.
Well, I can say this. It's a great time to be a writer and a reader. I think, honestly, the traditional publishers are having a lot of trouble dealing with this because there are some brilliant writers that are actually being published now that weren't being published because they broke too many rules. The traditional publishers, they really pigeonhole writers. They say it has to fit into this little box, otherwise we can't publish it. So what the digital boom has done, especially for writers like me, because I'm all about breaking the rules, is if there's a rule there, I will break it, intentionally or not intentionally. But what it has done is allowed writers to blend genres together. Because before, they were totally separate. And if you tried to write a horror comedy or, you know, a horror parody or anything like that, you were going to have a hard time publishing it. And now you can. So all the readers are benefiting from this. And I really think that publishers, traditional publishers, are going to have a hard time continuing to compete for this. And there are a lot of other issues involved with it, you know, royalties and all that. But I'm pleased as punch, and I can say that the majority of my sales come in digital format. They're cheaper. Why would you not want to pay, you know, $3 to $7 for a book in digital format that you're going to pay $10 to $15 in paperback?
So you're sacrificing cost for numbers. You know, you'd rather have 10 people buy it for a dollar than one person buy it for $10.
Well, it's also the percentage of royalties that you get. The royalties are much higher in digital format than they are in paperback. So
I did not know that.
For a $10 or $15 book printed through a publisher, I'm going to get a, you know, 5 to 7% royalty versus a digital format, I'm going to get 70%.
Wow.
So
I need to start writing something.
Exactly.
Self-publish it.
So for a $3, $3.99 or $5.99 or $7.99 book, I'm making more than I would be for a $10 or $15 paperback.
And all the kids these days, they all have those devices and stuff. You know, I don't know anybody under the age of, say, 25 that actively goes out book shopping unless they're really, really like English major type things too. So it is the way of the future, good or bad. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, where do you buy paperback or hardback books anymore?
See, there's a good question.
Barnes & Noble, they're gone. the brick and mortar stores. Mm-hmm. Borders is gone.
Newsstands in general are fading out, yeah, and all that. So
most of the, if you want a paperback book, you're going to Target.
That is true.
And you know, I see people reading my books on their iPhones, and I never would have thought that, but I'm glad for it. You know, and a lot of writers are, you know, I've been offered contracts, and I'm like, can't you beat this? They're like, well, no. It's like, sorry. Yeah.
So what have you got coming out on the horizon? I assume another book on Screen Park for next year and another series of iZombie. You've done four so far. Number five's on the horizon all the way through number 10. What else is in the old head there that you're thinking of putting on paper or keystroke?
Well, my to-be-written list is huge. That's one blessing that I have. I do not suffer from writer's block. Right now I'm working on a book called Hell's Muse. I really wanted to challenge myself with this one, so I'm writing a book within a book within a book. And
this isn't like Inception or anything like that, is it?
No, it's not. It actually started out with a regular book, but I had to make some changes based on some suggestions from an editor. So that book is coming out. It's a straight up horror novel. It's one of those books that, since I'm allowed this, I needed to exorcise some demons with it, literally and figuratively. So I started writing this just brutal book, and I've always wanted to write a book set in hell. So part of this book is set in hell.
You went to my ex-girlfriend's house.
I did.
Awesome.
I did. It was scary.
Yes, it can be.
I've got that. I have a series called the Fringe Killer series, which is a thriller, horror, paranormal kind of series that focuses on people that live in the fringe of society. And they are either the victims or the murderers.
And nobody in the haunt industry ever lives on the fringe of society.
Not at all.
No.
I've already got a couple of books planned for that one. The problem that I'm facing now is that, like, I just published Lie, Zombie, Lie, which is the fourth in the series. Two or three days after that was published, I had readers emailing me saying, when are you going to get the next one done? I just finished this one. So they're rabid fans. Here's the one thing I'll say about horror fans. They may not have the numbers that erotica and romance and other genres have, but they are rabid fans. Once you get a horror fan, you've got them for life. And I love that about them, and I love communicating with horror fans because they just love the genre. They love to be scared, and I love to be scared.
Well, that's why we're all in this building right now with all the thousands of fans of this particular genre.
Yeah, it's been fun just watching the people.
And there have been some, shall we say, colorful characters at that walk around. For people who have maybe not gotten a copy of the book or would like to maybe find it online, download it, or buy a paperback or something like that, how can they get a hold of you? How can they go about finding everything that you've written?
You can get more information about me than you ever wanted to know from getjacked.net. That's getjacked.net.
No E.
No E. Because Get Jacked with an E was already taken.
I don't even want to think about what that site could have been. So don't mistype it when you're typing that.
Actually, it has to do with musical equipment.
Oh, I was hoping it wasn't some German site of some sort. And anyway, you know how haunters' minds are twisted like that. Okay, and we just had to go there.
You're right. I'm glad you did.
But your books are on Amazon or any of the app stores for books and things?
Sure thing.
And what do you search for at that point?
You can just search for my name and all of them will come up. There's another series I wrote, which is I didn't bring it here, which now I wish I would have. It's a silly little series about a transgendered superhero. It's crazy. With a really, really sassy narrator. I decided that the series is called Shiro. And the second book is Shiro 2, Zombie A-Go-Go. And
see, that just sounds cool. People here would eat that up.
I know. It will be here next year.
Next year, then.
Next year. But the narrator, the narrator will make fun of you, I promise you.
Something like maybe Divine should have read it if it ever came out in audio. Assuming Divine was alive, of course. But
exactly.
Any of your books on audio?
No, but I'm working on that. I'm working on it.
So go to your usual place where you find books. Look for Jack Wallen. And you'll find all the iZombie and the Shiro's and all this really cool stuff. Or getjacked.com
.net
.net for more information you ever want to know about Jack Wallen. A pleasure to speak with you, sir.
Pleasure,
I wish you nothing but success with these. Best of luck on the new books coming out, and especially the Scream Park thing, which is just a clever idea in itself. Once again, Drew Badger here live at Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky, for the Big Scary Show, and I am out.
Stiff Magazine presents The Return of MonsterCon. Coming to the Greenville Hilton in Greenville, South Carolina, July 26th through 28th, 2013. MonsterCon will feature celebrity guests, including guest of honor David Prowse, comic and toy vendor areas, panels and discussion groups, special offers for local and independent artists, horror and sci-fi themed entertainment, the MonsterCon Film Festival, live music by the Graveyard Boulevard, Valentine Wolf, and others, anime, sideshow performances by Captain Stab Tuggo and Madame Maybell, late-night entertainment for adults featuring single-cell entertainment, and much, much more. For more information, details, directions, and tickets, visit MonsterCon.org. That's MonsterCon.org. Don't miss the return of MonsterCon. Order tickets now before it's too late.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is The Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, it's the holiday season, and I was out doing my Christmas shopping, and it made me think. You know, as a haunter, I understand the pain of a seasonal employee. You know, doing repetitive actions over and over again for your holiday customers and listening to the same music constantly, and it just drills into your head so you hear the screams and the same notes at the exact same time while going through the motions of your character. And I feel that same pain for, you know, the seasonal employees at the Christmas holiday. Yep. And it's worse for them because they've been listening to Christmas music for 8 to 12 hours a day since September, the poor bastards. And then you think about all the crazies they're dealing with in line, you know, everybody who's buying all the weird Christmas stuff that's out there and trying to get the perfect presents. These people are nuts. You stand next to them in line, but it gets worse. Think about some of the people you work with. Now imagine that for Christmas in retail. That's right, these people are working with some really weird lunatics. I was in line today, picking out a couple Christmas presents and some good coffee, because when I go home, the coffee's terrible. And, you know, the poor guy, I could see the pain in his eyes as he's ringing me up, and the cashier next to him was literally telling him, "Oh, I need to tell you my sandwich story." And you could see the pain in the eyes that this poor kid had heard the sandwich story many, many times. So, as a fellow seasonal employee, my heart goes out to everyone out there in retail during the Christmas season. Stay strong. So until next time, this is Stormy Claws. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year!
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Storm.
Hey, this is Josh Gates from Sci-Fi's Destination Truth, encouraging you to check out HauntMinute.com.
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following people and others. We wish to thank authors Jack Wallen and author and artist known as Brom for coming on the show. Jimmy Talkington and Thornweb Designs, thornwebdesigns.com. Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, at hauntaudio.com. Von Charon Productions, Von Charon, VonCharon.com. Screamline Studios,
at ScreenLineStudios.com. We'd also like to thank the four ghosts. Storm, catch his ramblings at HauntMinute.com. The Unknown Scare Actor, videos and more, UnknownScareActor.com. The Haunt Rocker, Jerry Vane, pick up his latest CD, The Attic, at JerryVane.com. And Drew Badger, actor, trainer, consultant, and more, RabbitBadger.biz. Be sure to tell us what you think. Send feedback to us at feedback@BigScaryShow.com. And keep sending in those news items, news@BigScaryShow.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/BigScaryShow. Or on Twitter at BigScaryShow. And you can find us on iTunes. Search Big Scary Show in the iTunes store. Tune in next time when we bring you the latest news and information from the world of haunting and horror. And thank you once again for listening. Without you, we are nothing. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and others. This is the Big Scary Show. Ha 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 ha!